Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. By now, a lot of folks obviously are familiar with the case of Kim Davis there in Kentucky and everything that is taking place with that particular issue and how she was jailed and then released from jail and has basically come out and said that she still, even with the threat of jail or going back to jail, is not going to compromise her conviction about issuing marriage licenses for gay couples. And there's been a lot written on this subject. There's been a lot talked about some of the surrounding issues, some of the ancillary issues related to this. But there's one that I saw, that one article that I thought was very interesting. It gets a little bit more to the crux of the issue, especially about the idea of the rule of law and so forth. And that article was written by Steve Turley. Steve's been with me on the program before. His website says, very humbly, I think, he's got quite a resume, but very humbly it says this: I'm a theologian, a social theorist, a classical Christian educator, and back in the day, he says he was a prize-winning classical guitarist. So he's a sought-after speaker, very much in demand, and yet he's agreed to come on the program again today to talk us through this article that he has written on his website. Let me give you that website right up front, because it's something you're going to want to go to in order to read more of the articles that he writes and to find out more about his speaking engagements and so forth. It's called Turley Talks. His last name is spelled T-U-R-L-E-Y. TurleyTalks.com. So if you go to TurleyTalks.com, you'll see more information about Steve himself, a little bit about his books. There's some videos and speaking engagements and so forth, podcasts, his blog, a lot of information out there. Steve, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hi, Kevin. It's great to be with you again.
Yeah, great to have you. Yeah, I really enjoyed the piece that you wrote. Really taxed me trying to understand the law in the proper sense, but I thought it was very well written, and it could help a person, even like myself, to be able to understand what was the difference between the way that some, even some very popular, and maybe even some people would say conservative people are approaching this issue. That even there's some problems with the way that they're thinking. I'm talking a little bit in code there, not giving away what's in the article, but let me let you talk us through what you write in this article.
Yes, thank you for that. My overall concern, the reason why I wrote the article, is that we all rather naturally buy into this idea that our laws and our jurists, our court systems are somehow religiously neutral, that ideally they neither favor nor discriminate against any particular religion. And so in a pluralistic society, we all need to be careful to keep our religious beliefs and opinions to ourselves. You know the old adage, what are the two things that you never talk about in public, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is this is what many faulted Kim Davis for. She used the force of law to impose her own private, personal, religious beliefs on others that don't share those beliefs. But what I ask is, what if it turns out that the judiciary are actually imposing their own personal religious opinions on us all the time, but under the cloak of this supposed religious neutrality?
Mm.
Well, then, of course, that would mean that the religious reasonings and opinions of some are given arbitrary preferential treatment at the expense of others, while at the same time violating the very religious neutrality that we're told the courts are upholding. And so for me, the Kim Davis incident brings to the fore several questions. What, in fact, is religion? What is its appropriate relationship to law? And then how does the correcting of some faulty assumptions regarding these questions impact our interpretation of what Kim did.
Excellent. You, in the very beginning of the article, then you recount a, I guess it was a news video, you know, a video of the news with Judge Andrew Napolitano, and the way that he weighed in on the controversy surrounding what was taking place with this county clerk. What was it that he said there that caused him to come up on your radar to see that he was really holding to this view, the view that supposed moral neutrality of the law, and not really realizing that they were actually imposing their own morality upon this situation?
Yeah, and I did, you know, I wrote this with Judge Napolitano as my foil with a bit of trepidation. I tend to like the guy, you know. But I remember R.C. Sproul saying something akin to, you know, each one of us has a theology. We all end up theologizing in some way or another. And so the only question is whether we have a good one or a bad one.
Exactly. And everybody's a theologian, right? Yeah.
Everybody is a theologian. Yeah. So trained theologians, I think we can call out the good judge, again, with whom I'm normally in agreement, as being guilty of very poor theologizing. And where I think he's going wrong is he equates what he calls the institution, or he calls the well established precedent of the separation between church and state. That's what he thought Kim Davis violated. Well, he equivocates that institutional separation between church and state with the categorical separation between religion and law. And they're not the same, historically speaking. And this is because the institutional separation of church and state goes way back. It goes to the Byzantine Empire and its understanding of church-state relations in what they called symphonia, or Galatius' conception of the two swords theory in the 5th century, Luther's two kingdoms theory, the bicovenantal structure of Reformed theology, the Kuyperian concept of sphere sovereignty, right, where family, church, and state all have their respective responsibilities for God. We're by no means the first society that attempted clear lines of distinction between church and state, but in none of these historical arrangements do you find a religion-law separation. In other words, these institutional separations do not entail categorical separations, such that law is a wholly separate category from religion. That would have been unintelligible in these other societies with comparable church-state separation arrangements. And so I would argue the good judge equivocates there. And then from there, I think he doesn't even recognize that when you start engaging in some kind of definition or delineation of religion, you can't do so without some kind of religious reasoning, you know. No more than if I defined and delineated chemistry without at least some preconception of what science is, I can't define and delineate religion without some preconception of what religion is. And whether he knows it or not, he is faulting Kim Davis for not keeping what he calls her private, personal, religious beliefs to herself. But all the time, throughout his article, he's imposing his own religious preconceptions on us.
And he's trying to back his particular religious beliefs up with this supposed neutrality of the law, right?
Right, exactly.
So that gives, obviously, as a judge, and as if most people buy into the idea that there is no morality being imposed by the law, then it makes his argument not only seem plausible, but it makes it seem desirable. Okay, well, here's this entity that doesn't have a dog in this fight, who is just an arbitrator of what is taking place. And out of fairness, if we don't take sides, then the fair decision could be made by this referee who is completely neutral in this discussion, and therefore that's what should rule the day. When we look behind the curtain, though, we see that that is a false assumption right in the very beginning.
That's right. That's exactly. We have to, that scenario you just beautifully described actually has a history to it. It's not a given. It's not, things are just that way. It actually comes out of the 18th century Enlightenment. And what it required was a redefinition of religion. What I don't think people recognize is that the term, the Latin term religio, actually originally meant the fulfillment of social obligations. So in the ancient Greek and Roman worlds, that certainly involved honoring the gods, but it was by no means limited to such. Religio involved primarily the fulfillment of familial, civic, political demands of society. The term actually is made up of religare, to retie or to rebind that to which one is bound. And we see this today. There are several religions without any particular god, such as Buddhism and Taoism and Confucianism. And so this is why a century of cultural anthropological research has concluded that religion is not essentially about convictions about deities or spirit beings or anything like that. They would argue religion is social order. Specifically, religion constitutes the rules, the understandings, the goals that are considered, they're considered absolute, unquestionable in a society, and they're thereby able to govern and organize the various aspects of social order. So I like to use the example, if I get pulled over by a police officer for speeding, which I have, and I say, you know, I really don't like that law. Well, what's he going to say to me? Yeah. You know, that law offends me. You know, what's he going to say? You know, well, if he's in a good mood, he'll say that's all fine and dandy, but you still broke it.
Yeah.
So in this case, the law is absolute. It's unquestionable. I don't define it. It defines me. And that's because all societies have to be governed by rules, understandings, and goals considered absolute and unquestionable, and in many ways are taken on by faith. And what this means, what's so amazing, is that there is simply no such thing as a social order that is organized and governed apart from religion. All social orders are, by definition, religious. All social orders are organized and governed by absolute and unquestionable principles. And it's therefore not a question of whether our society is going to be organized by religion, but rather which one is going to organize our society. That changes, I think, the debate entirely.
Is this really a discussion about the difference between the freedom of worship and the freedom of religion? I had noted before about how even the president started to use the term freedom of worship, which, if I could basically give my understanding of the distinction between the two of them, he was basically saying that, you know, you can believe whatever you want to believe within the confines of the walls of your church. On Sunday morning, you want to go in there and say you believe in this and believe in that. That's fine. You have a freedom to do that. The difference then between freedom of religion would be you can't actually put those things into practice into society. And so once you bring it outside the walls of the church, now you have gone to meddling, like they say here in the South. They've gone to meddling, and you have actually then, they would say, trying now to impose your religion upon other people. We would say, no, I'm trying to live out my religion according to the daily practice of my daily life. So is this part of the discussion that you're talking about in this article?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you articulated beautifully. I think it was Bill Kavanaugh, the political theologian, who pointed out that prior to 1940, whenever the Supreme Court used the term religion, it was always to talk about what bound us together and unified us as a nation. After 1940, they started referring to it negatively as something that divides. And he notes that it's during a time when intra-denominational conflicts, say, between Catholics and Protestants, are at an all-time low. So something else is going on there, and it seems to be very much linked to the fleshing out of the Enlightenment's redefinition of religion. The Enlightenment redefines religion as a personal, private belief, and it does so only after it redefines knowledge. It redefines knowledge because largely the universities get a new, they get a new manager, the rising nation state, and the state starts to take over the universities. Harry Glanzer calls it the nationalization of universities. And so knowledge focused more on management and control, to which they turned to science. And eventually, over several decades, religious knowledge, which was considered classically the highest form of knowledge, what they would call theoria, it was really pushed off, pushed into basements, into little departments or little classrooms. It's a specialty thing. It really doesn't matter in terms of what knowledge actually is. And that made its way into jurisprudence, so that where the founders once believed in more natural law and natural law tradition, it's very much compatible with Christian conceptions of the world, that our laws are not arbitrary, that they reflect nature, and they reflect the goal, the purpose, the meaning, the integrity that's embedded in the created order around us. That conception of natural law basically gets eclipsed by positivist law in the 19th century. And positivist law says, well, no, the world has no divine meaning. It has no purpose. It's just biological, chemical, physical causal laws, right? That's all science tells us it is. So all law is purely cultural. It's just a social construct. We just make it up.
Mm.
And we make it up in favor of the constituencies that somehow were able to bump their way to the front. And so that tends to be what governs jurist theory today.
Mm-hmm.
And the frightening thing is now, as we saw post-1940, we're beginning to see that their whole conception of religion is this personal private belief, nothing more than, keep it to yourself, don't impose it on anyone else. We're finding that has become institutionalized in our very thinking, in the way we're living, and we're finding it's something that's allowing for a massive expansion of the state to exercise a total monopolizing authority over the public square, so that any other contrary vision of the public, particularly the Christian vision, is pushed into the private and told you have no place here, the naked public square, as it's said.
Mm. Well, with the Supreme Court decision that took place, of course, legalizing gay marriage and so forth, it seemed that even the judges in the majority, they pointed to the fact that they were overriding, at least in the original questions that they had, the questioning period before making their ruling. They seemed to understand that they were going to be overriding a tremendous weight of precedent that,
yeah,
not just from the beginning of the country, but from the beginning of time, from
right,
the universal way that marriage was held. And yet they just seemed to override that so easily. When they made those statements in the oral arguments, I was like, well, this is... how could he possibly override his own statements afterwards? And yet he did, and apparently he did, based upon what you were just saying, because they're ruling according to what the wind of social change is taking place, rather than on something much more enduring, like the tremendous amount of historical precedent against making this decision. It was just astounding. Let me ask you a question directly here with Kim Davis. There's an article out on Ref 21 where one of the two people take two different positions on it. I think Rick Phillips takes the position that I would stand with. But a fellow by the name of Brad Littlejohn, his article says this: thinking thrice before supporting Kim Davis. And part of his argument in that article is this. He says that, well, there's been a lot of people that have said, I object to something on grounds that it goes against my biblical belief. And basically he said, if we let Kim Davis do this, where does this end? Now we've got anybody and everybody can just say, I'm not going to perform my responsibilities because it goes against my religious belief. How would we answer that?
Yeah, that's I've heard that several times as well. And I think there's two things. One, it presupposes legitimacy, that it is just a private personal belief. That's all Kim Davis has to appeal to. That's the only space that secularism is allowed for the freedom of religion, is my own conscience. I have nothing else, right? As you said, the distinction between freedom of worship and freedom of religion. So, in one sense, I think it's an uncritical reflection on how we're allowing secular reconfigurations to define how we're understanding the situation. But I think more at a larger level, what we have to understand is that if this is not about belief, mere belief, if we're going to understand it in terms of what the founders believe to be an ordered liberty, then we have to all affirm that there is some divine meaning and purpose out there that we're supposed to conform to. It's not just sitting out there, you know, for its own health. It's there with a harmony, with a balance, with an economy of goods that we're called to conform our lives to.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony, I think, in all of this is Kim Davis is the only one that's actually affirming that.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only one that I know of who's actually said something absolutely true. This is against God's law, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, well, what do you do? Ordered liberty, wonderful. So when we turn around and we say, well, you know, if everybody gets to follow their own beliefs and then administer laws accordingly, well, where does it all end? Sure, yeah, if we redefine Christianity as pure, private, personal belief, sure, we can then keep going. If Kim Davis believes she's a leprechaun, you know, that's fine. But we have problems when she starts charging us gold coins or, you know, Lucky Charms to get our certificates or our licenses, then we've got a problem. It's a very condescending view of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Religion is social order, and you're always going to have some ultimate rule, understanding, and goal governing your social order. We have moved from an Anglo-Protestant tradition, as that sacred, as that absolute, to a secular liberal society. And at the very least, I would hope that Christians recognize that that this shift is not only something radically dehumanizing, but it's something that's radically changing Christianity itself by redefining it as a personal, private faith. So I would say to him, when all is said and done, we're not talking about personal, private beliefs. We're talking about whether we're going to be a republic of ordered liberty, or whether we're going to move over to, ironically, this is the irony, ironically, a secular liberal democracy that is, in effect, a theocracy of deified human opinion.
Hmm. I think the issues are that important. That's where we're at. That's what we're right here on the cusp of. And I think, and I really appreciate the fact that your article and other statements that you have made really point to that. You know, one word has come up over and over today in our discussion, a word in another version of it as well, but the idea that definitions matter. We talked about definitions and redefinitions, and we're finding that things that were once understood have been changed. Here we're talking about the redefinition of marriage,
right,
but we talked about the redefinition of law or the basis of the law,
right,
redefinition of religion and the purposes of religion in society. So that's really the takeaway for me, that we really need to understand what we believe. And then once we understand, clearly define it, like it says in Jude, you know, that we earnestly contend for the faith. It has the definite article with it, an understood propositional truths of what we believe, not just a fuzzy feeling, but there is propositional truths associated with understandable truths that are associated with the Christian religion. Dr. Turley, thanks so much for joining us today and talking about this issue. We really appreciate the work that you're doing. I'm going to keep a watch there on your blog to see what else comes up, and love to have you back on the program.
Thanks so much, Kevin. God bless.
Okay, and that was Dr. Steve Turley that we were talking to. You can go out and learn more about Dr. Turley out on his website, Turley Talks. That's turleytalks.com. Go out there and check out more about his books and about his speaking engagement, podcast, blog, the whole nine yards. You can get a lot of good information out there. Remember this. The Lord Jesus Christ said, He said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.